is Pamela Kuhn, and the curtain is up on Center Stage, the show about the arts and the artists behind their work. A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, it has just been announced for the Turner Classic Movie Film Festival 2025 that the opening night red carpet event will be the presentation of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, with director George Lucas in attendance. Well, if there was ever the perfect movie for this girl, then this movie from the original Star Wars canon, it is. I have my press credentials and will be there hoping to catch sight of Mr. Lucas and actors from the film who may be present that night. Because TCM always has lots of surprises in store for their destination festival, and you never know who is actually going to show up at the last minute to thrill the audience. And oftentimes, the press doesn't know until the final hours before the presentation. I think it is interesting to note that I have read a few responses on social media about the choice of The Empire Strikes Back, which have surprised me. One Turner Classic Movie Film Festival attendee said, "How disappointing." Another said, "I expected more from this film festival." Well, my response is, just what would you want? The legacy of Star Wars contains several elements. One is that this is one of the most successful film revolutions in the history of filmmaking. It offered up spectacular visual effects, memorable characters, an instantly recognizable film score. But more than that, it gave the world a deep dive into a story centered around the hero's journey. It brought us into an era where millions delved further into their own personal recognition of the importance of myth and how our lives are affected by those stories. That quality of story arc stays with the fans, and the filmmaking was simply superb. In the case of The Empire Strikes Back, it offered Hollywood something that doesn't always ring true. It was actually a successful sequel. For many cinephiles, it is perhaps the best movie of the original trilogy. This is due in part to the direction of Irvin Kershner. George Lucas stepped down from his role as director after Star Wars: A New Hope. He wanted a director who would concentrate on character development, and a director he could trust. At first, Kershner, who Lucas knew as a teacher at the University of Southern California Cinema School, turned the job down. He asked George Lucas, "Of all the younger guys around, all the hot shots, why me?" Lucas replied, "Well, because you know everything a Hollywood director is supposed to know, but you're not Hollywood." Kershner, with his love of strengthening character while keeping the camera lingering on an actor's face, was the perfect choice. It was a darker film, surveying the contrast of the dark and the light. The Empire Strikes Back needed new eyes from a director who would also continue to be sensitive to Lucas's spiritual fairy tale. Many of my listeners know my love and devotion to the Star Wars saga, But let me share why that devotion is so personally profound. While I lived in Los Angeles in the 1970s, I remember in 1977 when a series of billboard signs started to pop up around the Los Angeles city streets. They were black with white writing of just a simple phrase, "A long time ago in a galaxy far away," or simply, "Princess Leia." The billboards gave just enough hint to raise everyone's curiosity. We moviegoers knew we were in for something special. Or perhaps at that moment in time, we were just wishing for something special. The Vietnam War had finished. U.S. President Richard Nixon had just resigned. We were still war-torn in spirit. Movies at that time were confused and were composed of reality situations with the war still fresh in our minds, or violent, or psychologically repressed action. Think Taxi Driver, All the President's Men, Clint Eastwood with The Enforcer, The Omen. It was a mixed bag, but one filmmaker, George Lucas, with a dream about a fantasy addressing the hero's journey, gave us the collective consciousness of what we needed. Star Wars, A New Hope, and it was literally that. It was an extraordinary delivery, like a baby who came into the world mild and happy. It took a couple of months for the word of mouth about the film to take hold until, like all things cult, there was an explosion. Star Wars gave us hope and the freedom to laugh again, to rally behind characters beautifully drawn to revive our imaginations once more. And for me, it was a scene-stealing arena that allowed me to crawl into and celebrate. I had just married a Russian violinist, a defector from the USSR. He had charmed me, wooed me, married me, and thrown me aside just as quickly as the courtship. You see, he only really wanted entry to the United States. It was all a hoax for him. But it was deadly to this young girl who had put faith into the process of love and trust. I was preparing to bail, to do a much-needed let's save myself maneuver by moving to England to do postgraduate study. Or maybe I was just leaving to avoid the shame and anger around the failed sham of a marriage. I was ready for an injection of hope to help me define who I was. I found myself looking forward to spying the curiosity-inspiring signs, offering hints at the new movie. I felt as if the signs were meant for me, for a turn in the road, a few steps out of my personal situation. I was intrigued. You could feel the crisp excitement of something so new, as if we were going to turn a corner after years of being cynical with the war and ashamed of presidency. And I was right. 2 weeks before I was to leave for London, a friend invited me to go to Star Wars with her in Westwood in West L.A. She prepared me by saying, "We have to go early." And she wasn't kidding. What we found in Westwood was a line of people several blocks long. The entirety of the Wilshire Boulevard sidewalks were filled with people waiting to cram inside the theater. On the streets, convertible cars were slowly passing, selling homemade memorabilia. George Lucas still hadn't had the chance to develop a product line yet. So people were doing their own thing, making their own figurines and lightsaber swords. The t-shirts being sold from the cars was holding up traffic. I'll never forget the delightful chaos. It was an incredible moment in time. When Star Wars originally opened in May of 1977, it only opened at 43 theaters. By the time I was in Westwood for my first viewing, it was being shown in 1,000 theaters. Word of mouth about this one-of-a-kind film had spread like wildfire. It was everyone's chance to have fun at the movies. I will never forget the opening long crawl shot, the Largo Pace reveal of the opening spaceship, the crowd cheering, the Dolby setup of sound, and the booing whenever Darth Vader appeared on screen. It was incredible to be whisked away with such cinematic splendor and energy. Special effects that dazzled and heroes who you wanted to identify with. It was almost hallucinogenic. I was so enraptured and so taken out of my troubled personal world that I went back the next night to see this extravaganza again. The lines were just as long. The movie was just as dizzyingly satisfying. I celebrated being alive. It allowed me to forget about my failed marriage. It allowed me to let go of my troubles. It allowed me to feel as if I could take an element of Luke Skywalker's journey of individuation as a hero and incorporate it into my spirit. In other words, it was exactly what I needed at the right time. It gave me the strength to face my move to London with courage rather than fear. My self-judgment for my unworthy personal decisions was lessened. I felt as if I had gone to my soul home. I think that everyone who sought out Star Wars in the early days surrounding the opening was looking to identify with hope, to identify with something stronger than ourselves at that moment in history. But with that identification, we were personally working out a revivified mystery of the dark and the light. I would see Star Wars 13 times over that week. With each viewing, I started to memorize the musical cues. I waited for the leitmotif themes denoting the characters that composer John Williams had so deftly laid out for us. To this day, I still feel the orchestral cues introducing scene to scene. I cannot imagine the film without the romantic, symphonic strength of the John Williams score. The advantage of the Westwood Theater where I viewed the film was that it had been reworked for Dolby Sound specifically for the movie. It was not surround sound or Sensurround, but Dolby, where the resonance of sound was full and vibrational stereophonic. It pulled you inside the story. The leitmotifs were crafted on strong musical themes with rich orchestral arrangements. Wars, A New Hope was the love child idea of George Lucas after the success of his earlier American Graffiti. Throughout the storytelling arc in the first three films, The Empire Strikes Back, I feel, made the most important personal commitment in the original trilogy. I was living in London when The Empire Strikes Back was released. I watched Time Out magazine, then the Town Crier, for everything that was worthwhile in London life for news of the release. At the Odeon at Leicester Square on opening night, I bought a £5 ticket for £15 from a scalper. I would have paid higher. And with the big reveal in the storyline in this film, all Star Wars fans were exultant in the surety of more films to follow. Luke Skywalker still retained all his brash glory and might, but he was allowed to develop here, to feel fear, confront his ego, face his dark side, and wander into the final scene with all the bravado of the Magnificent Seven. In Hollywood in April, I'll be standing there waiting for George Lucas to represent not only the film, but the optimism of America. Because as history works in cycles, if there is ever a time we need optimism, it is now. I expect that the boy in George Lucas is still alive, still viewing The Empire Strikes Back as his message to all those who seek truth will find that it will not necessarily be easy. George Lucas spent a considerable amount of time consulting with mythologist and writer, the legendary Joseph Campbell. He himself is as much a cult figure as the Star Wars saga. Campbell and George Lucas met many times to discuss myth, Campbell's book, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, and the struggle between the dark and the light. Campbell felt that myths were more powerful when handed down in storytelling, that they need to be regenerated so they retain impact and growth. Lucas had a connection with the strength of this perspective. It was the seed that perpetuated the Star Wars family of films. It is what keeps us coming back to experience them again and again. Joseph Campbell was Lucas's living Yoda, his teacher and mentor. Lucas has said that he feels that what we do and how we live our lives every day shows how we are teachers, and certainly the message that he was putting down in his scripts was a responsible act. He followed Joseph Campbell's belief of living your bliss, which essentially meant following your inner voice and exploring what gives you the most happiness. The journey calls, and those that follow their path will be given what they need along the way. This is a compelling string theory in the characters who are introduced in the Star Wars films. George Lucas felt that the themes of redemption and transformation were central to the religious-like quality of the Star Wars stories. In the extraordinary PBS presentation, The Mythology of Star Wars from 1999, with journalist Bill Moyers, Lucas stated that Star Wars was made up of many central themes that made up the hero's journey. Commitment to friendship, our destiny, and how we resolve our own ambiguity. He felt that the power of developing fantasies is a profound process with dreamlike imagination. The Force, he stated, was an element of spirituality, and that all of us have the choice to be heroes in everyday life, if we follow our intuitive path. Composer John Williams said once, "It's not hard work that makes success. It's sustained hard work that makes success." He has definitely fulfilled that promise. Besides his legendary film compositions that span decades, he is a composer of concert pieces such as his violin concerto written for Anne Sophie Mutter and a horn concerto he wrote for Dale Clevenger of the Chicago Symphony. Even Placido Domingo requested that he attempt to write an opera. But Williams knows his comfort levels and where his talent is served best. He has been nominated for Oscars 54 times with 5 wins. Only Walt Disney has had more nominations. And Williams has been awarded over 7 decades. This is fine work for a man who was mentored by Hollywood titan composers such as Bernard Herrmann and Henry Mancini. In fact, he was once fired by Hollywood composer royalty Alfred Newman. John Williams is recognized as one of the most outstanding artistic voices in our history, composing the Liberty Fanfare for the rededication of the Statue of Liberty in 1986, and the themes for numerous summer, winter, and special Olympic Games. His list of awards and accolades is stupefying. But the force is forever strong with John Williams, a composer who was well established in Hollywood when he was recommended by Steven Spielberg to compose for George Lucas in his space opera. Williams set about with a childlike gaze to sketch the leitmotifs with brilliant color and texture for all the characters. For all of us listening in 1977 to the original Star Wars, the music was as powerful as the visual. And even more so with his personal shepherding of us as we transitioned from scene to scene. As a musician, I remember the subtleties of color in the strings and brass, which of course was a reminder to me that Williams found the orchestral technique of Gustav Holst in The Planets, and was inspired by the rich orchestrations of Richard Strauss and Richard Wagner. In the glissandi of the strings, I could hear the influence of Strauss. The depth of the brass brought me back to Wagner's use of the French horns and the tuba for his own leitmotifs in Der Ring des Nibelungen. Percussion, trumpets, and thrilling strings were feasting on a composition that suited any large symphonic orchestra. And as we have seen since, the Vienna Philharmonic, the Boston Symphony, the London Symphony Orchestra, and many more have reveled in performances of his music, oftentimes with John Williams conducting. All musicians and critics respect the fact that John Williams' music and arrangements are on a par with any great classical composer. Every professional musician that I have spoken to who has worked with him only has high regard for the composer and for his conducting skills. John Williams himself says he does not think of himself as a classical composer, but to our ears, his music gives us a different message. In his early life in Hollywood, he often performed as a studio musician, performing for composers such as Jerry Goldsmith, Elmer Bernstein, and Henry Mancini. I'm sure that his young ears were finely tuned to the gifts that were being handed down by these great composers. He developed a style of complex orchestration following that which was perfect for the Star Wars scenarios. And his music lives on in the Star Wars canon. He is still composing with the energy of a young man. There is a familiarity between the love between the notes and the happiness that I view in his face. He has the look of a man who has been inspired by Joseph Campbell's Living Your Bliss and has kept his part of the bargain for the last 90 years. It's incredible when you consider that his entire life has been dedicated to music that he has made following his own intuition. Thank you. You see, the Force is strong with them all. George Lucas, Irvin Kershner, John Williams. So the choice of The Empire Strikes Back as the opening night film for the TCM Film Festival red carpet is not only the right choice, but it is inspired. Perhaps Ben Mankiewicz and his team are answering the call of the hero's journey for us all right now. We need to reflect upon our own myth-making, and we need to cheer once again in a darkened theater with the smell of popcorn in the background and the red velvet seats giving us our sacred space to revel in the power of film. This is our history, and Star Wars is a historical moment in time. May the Force always be with us. For more of my shows, please go to centerstagewithpamelacoon.com. I will be presenting more TCM-inspired broadcasts leading up to the film festival, April 24th through the 27th, in the weeks to come and directly after the festival. Stay with me, everyone, because this is where the magic is being made. To all my listeners, stay safe out there. This is Pamela Coon, and the curtain is now down on Center Stage.